Welcome to Story Comic Presents, where we interview amazing storytellers and artists. This is episode 353. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and we're honored to have with us the nationally acclaimed writer and celebrated poet and owner of All the Right Words, Amy Allen. Amy.
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing?
Oh. Good. I actually have a new title to add to that list, too. I was recently named the Poet Laureate of Shelburne, Vermont.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
See?
It's pretty cool. When I contacted the library in Shelburne to talk about a book launch event for this book that we're discussing of poetry, and the librarian, who was outstanding, great guy, in our exchanges back and forth said, by the way, we're looking for a new poet laureate in Shelburne. And would you consider applying? So I did. And actually quite a few people applied. You wouldn't think there would be much competition, but I guess there actually was. And I ended up getting the role. It's a 2-year position. And an 11-year-old boy also applied. And they asked if I would mind if they named him the junior poet laureate. And so this young boy, Roman, who goes to school here in Shelburne, is the junior poet laureate. And anyway, I'm going to work together. It involves a lot of outreach at local schools. And so he and I are going to work together when I'm at Shelburne Community School. But it's been really cool. So that's my most recent claim to fame.
The Shelburne poet laureate. That's awesome. Yeah. Because you're in Shelburne, Vermont, and there is a lot to do in Shelburne, Vermont as well. You got the Shelburne Museum there as well. And you got the teddy bear. Is the teddy bear factory is considered part of Shelburne?
Teddy bear factory, yep, is here. And yeah, there is quite a bit to do in Shelburne, Shelburne Farms. And it's just a pretty incredible place to live, but also a really unspoiled place to live. We live out on the point. And which is just this long, narrow strip of land surrounded by Lake Champlain on one side and the Shelburne Bay on the other side. And you can actually see, you know, from certain spots, you can see both bodies of water. It's not very wide. So, And there's a lot of undeveloped land that's preserved. So there's quite a bit of wildlife. And it's really pretty remarkable to live here.
A little bit off topic, Amy, before we talk about poetry, but then I have to ask you, as the Shelburne Poet Laureate, what is your take on CHAMP?
Oh, good question. I mean, you have to believe in magic, right? So you can't rule out the possibility that something big exists in that lake. I'll leave it at that. I mean, I'm a skeptic by nature, but you can't crush the hopes and dreams of so many. So I you have to hold out hope that there could be something.
Right. Yeah. This is amazing. I've never actually asked a CHAMP question. So this is like just seemed very apropos to ask that
question.
Yeah. So Amy, we're here to talk about your debut book, Mountain Offerings. As of this recording, it came out, was it April 2nd? Is that
correct? Yep. We decided to have it come out during April, which is National Poetry Month. So perfect timing. Right. And it's been a busy month with a lot of fun appearances and events connected to poetry, which is timed well with the book.
Because you've been writing poetry for quite a while. So why did it take you so long to actually make your own book, because you've had poetry for a long time?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, in part, it was because I didn't understand the process of how to be published until in 2019, I attended Middlebury's Bread Loaf Writers Conference. And I was lucky enough to attend. It was in Sicily, Italy. It was incredible, in this medieval town called Arice. With this big castle at the top of a hill, and it was just incredible and a great place to write. But I also met a lot of other writers, of course, and most of them were further along the path of publishing than I was at that point. And really, prior to that point, I had sort of focused on raising kids, my two children. But as they were getting older and more independent, I had a little bit more time to myself. So at this conference, they really took us through the ins and outs of how to even begin and how to get published. And so I began dabbling in that. And just after I published about 11 poems, I said, you know, I should probably move on to something bigger and put them into a collection and see if I can get the collection published. So that's sort of how it came.
And then how did you connect with Rootstock Publishing from that?
So in the same platform, there are a couple platforms for publishing, but one of the main ones is called Submittable. And I was searching through that platform looking for opportunities, people who are accepting manuscripts of poetry chapbooks, and really hoping to find one in Vermont, but I knew that might be challenging because we're a small state. So I found Samantha at Rootstock Publishing and sent an application and a manuscript to her. And I sent it to a few other places as well. But Samantha responded pretty quickly and said, you know, I've just started reading this. I'm not all the way through it, but it looks really good. And I'm thinking, you know, as I continue reading that I probably would like to publish this. So look, you know, get familiarize yourself with us and our company and be thinking about it, because I'm going to get back to you soon. So when she did, I said yes and withdrew it from everywhere else, because I just, so many of the poems are based in Vermont and about Vermont. Mm. And I felt like it's just sort of key to have a publisher in the state that understands the state and how to market a book that probably will mostly do well in Vermont with people who sort of, the imagery might resonate best with locals.
Right. So who would you say then the book is for? Is it, as you mentioned, is it specifically for Vermonters then?
Well, I think it's for anybody that appreciates the natural world. I would say there are a few categories, sort of three main themes of the poems in the book. And the biggest one is poetry about the natural world and sort of using elements of the natural world to illuminate bigger themes about human interactions and relationships and parenthood and things like that. And then another theme is my daughter went through a pretty severe illness. And I wrote quite a few poems about that to sort of help process that. So that's another one of the themes. And then another theme is partnership. And there are quite a few poems about how partnership changes over time, you know, from when your children are little until they're older. So I think the poems are really for anybody. And for me, I feel like poetry should really be accessible. I think my poems are accessible. They're not totally mysterious and cryptic and difficult to understand. And so I think a lot of people who maybe aren't avid readers of poetry or don't write poetry can find the genre to be daunting because, you know, they maybe have only experienced certain poets in school. And so I found that in my friends that have purchased the book and talked to me about it, that, you know, it seems to be accessible for a lot of people. And that was really important to me.
Would it be considered almost like an all ages poetry book since it's accessible?
I think, I think maybe teenage on. I mean, okay. There are some mature themes, but probably some younger people, those things would just go over their head anyway. So, but I would say teenagers on up.
Is this a kind of a book of poetry that you have to read from front to back, or is it something that you can kind of open up and read a poem in a different section of the?
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, I think you can jump around. There was certainly a thought put to the order of the poems,
right.
But they are not all interconnected and they don't all tell a story from start to finish. So it's very much something you could pick up and put down and pick and choose from.
Right. So how did this process work of you deciding to put the poems in a certain order? You mentioned there was like three themes that were in it. And did you actually have to edit some of the poetry out and say, this poem, I like it, but it really doesn't fit within the theme of the book that I'm kind of creating? Or were there ones that you say, did you actually write more poetry specifically for the book as well?
Well, that's a good question. The manuscript that I gave Samantha is exactly what the book ended up being, minus one poem. And it's actually the poem that I have. We took it out and instead I put it in Poem City, which is, you know, happening right now in Montpelier, right, with poems hung all over the city. And this poem is hung in the library, the Kellogg Hubbard Library. And it's about Amanda Gorman. And it's quite political. And it just did it. It always sort of stuck out to me as maybe not fitting within the collection. And then an initial review of the book before it had gone to print, the only negative or the only, you know, critique it had, everything was really positive. And then at the very end, it said, not sure that the Amanda Gorman poem fits with the rest of the collection. And it was exactly what I had been thinking in the back of my head. So it was great because, you know, you don't need to respond to every review and jump and correct everything. But I thought that was a fair critique. So we took that poem out and replaced it with one that I had written more recently since the whole process of the book getting published had taken place. It's hard when you're going through the publishing process and going back and forth and editing and then marketing and all of that, it's hard to make yourself also carve out time to keep writing more poetry. So I've been careful to do that. And I've written quite, you know, probably 18 to 20 poems since this book process has started, but we took one of those and added it and it was just a better fit.
Your poems have been in a lot of publications as well. And so from a logistics perspective, when you put a poem into another publication, like Pine Row Press or West Trade Review, is there a timeline where you can't publish that poem in another publication, or how does that work?
Well, that's a good question. And I had to research that myself as I went through this process. as long as the journal has already come out and they've done their publication and press, it's fine. And they really just want you to give an acknowledgement, which I did with each poem that's been previously published. I acknowledged in the back of the book and mentioned the date and the title and the journal and just to sort of give them credit. And it's interesting, you know, a lot of people who write might put their poems on Facebook. And if you have written a poem and put it on Facebook to share, you can't submit that for publication. That's considered publishing. So, it takes time to learn that. A lot of the journals will say in their specifications, like, this can't have been written anywhere else, including Facebook. They want the first pass, right, at everybody reading it. So, but as long as you acknowledge them and the issue has already come out, it's fine.
Well, even if you like recite it, or is it written word? Can you actually read
your poem?
I think
it's just written word. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, if you were going on tour and reciting it constantly, then that would probably not be great. But
so, which is interesting, as you also have a career as an editor and a writer, and you also have your own business. Do you find it important for you as someone that also does editing to find another editor for your own work, or do you find it's fine to edit your own work?
No, you definitely need. It's so important to have a good editor friend, no matter who you are. And I'm lucky. A woman that I met at the Bread Loaf Conference, and I have stayed in touch. She actually lives in Dubai. She's American, but has been living in Dubai. And she's a fiction writer. But we send our work back and forth, not all of it, but a good amount of it, to get feedback. We give each other feedback and edits. And it is so important to have someone else's eye on your work. Right. They're just things that you can't see. And everything that she notices is something that had been bothering me in the back of my head, or, you know, I couldn't. So it's just incredibly helpful to have a good editor friend, or several.
And how is editing poetry different than, say, editing long prose, like fiction or nonfiction or anything like that?
Well, for the most part, editing poetry, you're not looking so much at you know, grammar or syntax or structure or spelling, you know, right. those, it's such a short medium that those things have really been taken care of. So, editing poetry, I can use a lot of help with, line breaks. I don't think I'm great at knowing exactly always when to break a line and start a new one. So I tend to get help with that. And also I tend to be wordy. So in my writing, I overwrite sometimes, and it's really helpful to get edits. And this applies to both prose and poetry, but a lot of feedback for me will be, I think you can start this in the, you know, get rid of the first two stanzas, start in the third, you know, this, wow. That's where it really starts. That's where the piece really starts. And that's a common edit given to a lot of writers, no matter what form. You know, sometimes it just takes, you're warming up. Like, it takes a while to get going, and it's hard because you've spent a lot of time on those lines, and to just delete them is hard because you might really like them, but it's generally the right choice.
So would you actually have, like, you know, you always see like these shows have like a director's cut or something.
Yeah.
Do you have like, here's my unedited, like, yeah. You know, like, yeah. Like,
yes.
The vision, my first vision of what this poem would be.
Yeah. I have a lot of Google Docs abandoned, and yes, I do. But there's really not a whole lot of value, and ultimately, you have to let that go. And
when you get it together, talk about the logistics of, you found Samantha, you found Rootstock. They decided, yes, we want to publish your book. What were the next steps to that? How did the next processes go?
Well, Samantha's great because she's thought of everything, and it's a very dialed process with a really nice timeline. And she has an author handbook that spells everything out. And even I've asked her a couple follow-up questions and realized that the answer was actually in the author handbook all along. So it's sort of, they've thought of everything, and it's really helpful. But, in large part, the bulk of the beginning process is editing. And Samantha happens to be the poetry editor at Rootstock Publishing. So I worked directly with her, on edits, and we exchanged drafts back and forth. And ultimately you get an advanced reader's copy, and that's when you're trying to make just very, you know, maybe like there's a missing period. Like by that point, there shouldn't be major content edits.
Right.
And another part of the legwork is getting blurbs, like author blurbs for the book. And that's hard when it's your first book and you're a brand new author and you don't have another book out yet. But I was lucky enough to have a few writer friends who were kind enough to read, you know, you send them your manuscript and they read it and you keep following up, and they will, you know, give you a blurb that you can use to help promote your book. So, and then another part is cover design. And at Rootstock, they have art designers that will design the cover for you. But I wanted to do something a bit different. My daughter drew and designed the cover.
Okay.
And she's 19, and quite a few of the poems are about her, and she's read them and she knows that. Yeah. So it's funny working with your offspring, because, you know, when they're growing up and they bring you artwork home from school, you just praise it. But her first few rounds were not what I wanted. So it's different. You know, it's like, I had to still say, this is great, and I really love that you're doing this for me. But, you know, it took us quite a few rounds to get exactly what I was thinking of, and she got it right. So that was sort of a fun element. And she's right. Proud to have, you know, a mention of her name in the book and to have the cover credit. So that was an
and she
part.
Can put in her resume now that she's a book,
true.
She's a book cover designer now.
Yeah, good point.
Right.
When you're 19, your resume needs all the help it can get. So that's a good thing to add on there.
And so, Amy, I know enough about writing to know the word foreshadowing. So I just wanted to be. So you mentioned that this is my first book, and I haven't, like, when you do other books yet. So you're kind of, was there some foreshadow that you've already, now that you've already published one book, that you're already looking towards the future for another one then?
I definitely am. I have an open tab on my computer called Volume 2. And each new poem that I get to a finished state, I put into that document, and that's the one that's about, I just checked today, and it's 18 or 19 pages long. So we're getting there. This book is a chat book, which means it's shorter, around 20 pages, whereas a full volume is more like 40 pages. So that's what I'd like to do next, a longer. And I did research this as well. You can, in your next collection, include poems from your chapbook if you'd like to. Okay. But I would like to try to have it be all new work.
Right. Well, yeah, because according to this, it says it's 37 pages.
So. Oh, well, I think that's with a lot of the acknowledgments and I have it here in front of me too. Yeah. So there's a few extra pages, but there are about 19 poems, I think.
See, I was right, because I did pick up some of the language you said.
Yeah. Yeah. Good listening. For sure.
I also just want you to touch on a bit about your business, All the Right Words.
Yeah. So this I taught English for years and then ultimately worked in school administration and was director of college counseling and academics at a high school and did communications as well. But it got to the point where I was a single parent for almost all of my children's life. And it got to the point where I just wasn't able to be around enough for my children. So I decided to leave and do my job the way I really wanted to do it. I needed to be there until probably 6 p.m. each night. And I just, there was too much else going on with my kids at home. Right. So I left that role in 2019, which happened to be kind of good timing because it was right before COVID. Right. And I don't know that I would have wanted to be in a school during COVID. I think it would have been really hard. I know it was really hard. So anyway, I started this business. I had done this a little bit in the past, when I was at home with my children when they were babies. But it's all types of editing and college essay prep too. But I do have a lot of resume work with adults. And it's been really neat because every job is different. The college stuff is pretty consistent, and that's rewarding too, because that process is really daunting and not fun, I think, a lot of times for kids. But once you get them one-on-one and we're just talking about who they are and what makes them tick. I've worked with kids that thought they were not going to go to college and then decided, you know what, let me just throw my hat in the ring, and have helped them come up with something that they're proud of. And then it's neat to follow the process and see where they end up. It's really sort of the best part of what I think is kind of a crazy process, the whole college thing. So, and I miss working with students in schools, so that gives me a bit of that, that feel of the, still connecting with young people. So that's right. Been really nice. But all of the editing that I do is interesting. And as I've worked with people in medical school writing, medical papers. And in order to really edit something well, you have to educate yourself and understand what they're talking about. So, I worked with a friend that was going through nursing school writing all these papers. And so I'm learning as I'm editing. So it's really a nice variety and pretty rewarding work.
Amy, your book is published already, and if people want to buy your book, where is the best place they should go to?
Well, you can go to Rootstock Publishing website, and it's right on there. And actually, Samantha has signed copies, and she'll ship them. And the Flying Pig Bookstore in Shelburne has signed copies as well. And the Phoenix Bookstore in Rutland has copies. And you can, even if you can't attend the event that I'm doing there, you can order copies through them now, and I will sign it that night, and they will ship them to anyone who orders them. So there's quite a few, you know, it's on Amazon too, but I think it's much better to support local bookstores when you can.
Support your local bookstores. Yeah. Absolutely. And yeah. Also go out to your local library and request your library to actually buy a copy as well.
Yes, so. That's a great idea as well. Yeah. Support your local libraries as well.
Right. Perfect. Now, Amy, if people want to learn more about you and your work, where is the best place they could go to?
I would say my website, alloftherightwords.com, W-R-I-T-E. There's a little bit of everything on there. I decided not to make a separate website for my publications and just keep them right on there. So there's a little bit of everything there. But there's a link on the publications page to all the different journals that my poems have been published in, and a link to buy the book actually too through Rootstock. But each little poem there and journal that I've appeared in, and actually I have three new acceptances in the past few weeks of poems that I've submitted coming out in journals, you know, over the next few months. So I'll add them there. It's kind of exciting. The journey to publication is really, you know, 99.9% rejection. So when you get an acceptance, it's really great because it's a lot of no's.
And it's so hard, you know, being a writer, especially in poetry, you're kind of putting your heart out there.
Yeah, you really are.
And then just, you're literally getting rejected every time you actually express like emotion, like thing.
It's it's really true. But I've learned to, I very quickly glance at the emails and you can tell when it's a rejection, and I just skim it and delete it because you just can't dwell on it. And, you know, some of them take the time to say, this made the final round and we loved it so much and we really debated and, you know, it just didn't fit with the overall theme. You know, all of what we're publishing is about X, Y, and Z, and this didn't fit with that theme. And those I reply to and just say, thank you so much for being human, you know, in your rejection, your kind rejection is appreciated. And it really, and many of them say to submit again. And so I do, but the generic ones, you know, are tough, but you just can't take it personally because you don't know what they're looking for. You know, right. You just have to stay true to what you're doing and keep plugging away.
Well, listen, Amy, when you get volume two coming, you're going to have to come back on the show and we'll have to talk about volume two.
It's a deal. I'd love it.
Yeah.
She's a CD character. <That's funny. laughs> Yeah.
Good. So it just shows that Amiel is a really strong name. You got action figures named after you, and just like, you know, like.
Right? Yeah. I know. I told my husband, he's like, oh, that Amy Allen sounds fun. I'd like to. Let me show you. No. Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not action figure Amy Allen. I'm like, you know, just like, you know, like a published poet Amy Allen is where you are.